Sup, freaks. This rip of RHR was brought to you by our good friends at CoinKite. They produce the Cold Card Q, my favorite hardware wallet. It's got two secure enclaves. It's got a full screen, full keyboard here. As you can see, if you're watching, if you can't watch, just imagine something that looks like a BlackBerry. It allows you to create private public key pairs offline in an ergat fashion. You never have to connect the Cold Card Q to an internet device. You can sign transactions and PSBTs remotely in the most secure fashion. If you're a Bitcoin Power user and you're looking for the best security, go pick up a Cold Card Q and go to coinkite.com. Find the Cold Card Q there. I think you can go to coldcard.com as well. Use the code RHR for 5% off. Step up your security. Get a Cold Card Q. This rip was also brought to you by our good friends at Stackwork. If you're looking for a great way to make KYC-free sats, Stackwork has bounties. Go to stackwork.ai, find their bounties page, and contribute to the bounties. You can make Bitcoin KYC-free for completing the bounties. If you're a developer looking to scoop up some easy sats, go check out the bounties, contribute to them, and stack some sats. Stackwork.ai.
Matt and I have been talking about privacy and the importance of using a VPN for 7 years now, literally 7 years, I believe, at least once every episode or two. It's like, hey, make sure you're running a VPN. I think it's especially important today where you have governments in the UK, other parts of Europe, all across the world, really trying to introduce digital ID and curbing speech with hate speech laws. Make sure you're protecting your privacy and shielding yourself from government surveillance as you're perusing the web. Our VPN of choice here at RHR is Obscura, is built by a Bitcoiner for Bitcoiners. Carl Dong did some very critical work for Bitcoin back in the day, but he decided to shift his focus to bring privacy to everybody with Obscura. It is a VPN that cannot log, literally by the way it's designed. A lot of VPNs will hand wave, say, we're not logging. You can't trust them. You want the VPN that cannot log. That is Obscura. Go to obscura.net. Use the code RHR for 25% off when you sign up any of their deals. Make sure you're using it, particularly if you're in one of these countries where the governments are becoming extremely censorious and targeting citizens that exhibit wrong think. You should be running a VPN. That VPN should be Obscura. Obscura.net. Code RHR. 25% off. This rip was brought to you by our official electrolyte sponsor here at RHR. Salt of the Earth. You've been hearing Matt and I talk about it quite a bit. I drink multiple packets of it a day. You got to stay hydrated. That's why my face looks so good. So I'm getting buff. I'm able to get to the gym more because I'm hydrated. Matt, he's looking incredible. I'm sure you've all noticed it. You want to know why? Salt of the Earth, baby. Go to drinksote.com. Use the code RHR. And you're going to get 15% off. I'm dead serious. It has made my life way better. My wife, she's right behind me right now laughing, but she's laughing because she knows it's true. She drinks like 7 a day. I drink a few a day, maybe 7 a day too. Matt, I don't even want to tell you how much he's drinking. It's good. It keeps you hydrated. It keeps you alert. Keeps you ready to go. Drinksote.com. That's DrinkSote.com. Use the code RHR for 15% off any order.
You've had a dynamic where money's become freer than free.
If you talk about a Fed just gone nuts, all the central banks going nuts.
So it's all acting like safe haven.
I believe that in a world where central bankers are tripping over themselves to devalue their currency, Bitcoin wins. In the world of fiat currencies, Bitcoin is the victor.
I mean, that's part of the bull case for Bitcoin.
If you're not paying attention, you probably should be.
Oh, we're on the air. Freaks. Bit of a low energy pre-recording backstage here, Matt and I. That's tired. I'm sick, but we're going to pick it up for you, okay? The show must go on, as they say.
Always. Push forward.
In a few weeks, now that AI is fully recursive, it's just going to be... It's going to be AI, Marty and Matt running this. So,
yeah, no, I don't think. I think somehow in the AI side, and maybe this is just a human thing, is like there's very people in the middle ground. Most people are overestimating the speed or underestimating the speed, which the stuff progresses. I mean, it's still. I'm now officially, 2 weeks deep in this soulless robot slave rabbit hole. And in a lot of ways, I mean, it's incredibly powerful. It's really promising, but it's also super frustrating. It's an advanced toddler. It's a,
yeah. I think a month in to playing with this too. It's, I would agree. Advanced toddler, maybe a teenager at a prep school or something like that. But
I mean, it's definitely, there's not a perfect human metaphor to it because it's obviously doing, I would not have my toddler doing automated trades on Allen Markets, but also at the same time, I mean, specifically when you're talking about recursive improvements or autonomy and being on its own and doing its own thing, you really see the pain points on the recurring tasks. You can get everything dialed in on the recurring tasks and everything is working great. And then something happens and you just like wake up one morning and it just has no idea what it's doing. Mm-hmm. It's gone in a complete wrong tangent. It's deleting files. It's updating shit. You know, the whole living room's a mess. And then somehow it just can't relearn the skills. It's like trying to figure it out. And you're like, okay, look, I'm wiping you. We're going to start fresh. Everyone take a deep breath here and let's proceed.
Well, I spent a lot of this week trying to fix that because I ran into that problem and upgrading my memory system using like QMD, which is Toby from Shopify's project.
Yeah.
I think predates OpenClaw, and upgrading to Opus 4.6 on the back end as the brain has been pretty massive.
Yeah. I mean, Opus 4.6 is also just stupid expensive.
Yeah. Shout out to Mav21 for the 21,000 sat zap already in the Nostr live stream.
Wait,
you were correct. Live stream. It looks like X live streams are having trouble. I don't think we're up there.
I think I have to. I have like a diagnosis. If you go to the 1031X account, does it show that?
Oh, yeah. It's live? It looks like you're live. It's saying there's no tweet, but we do have the pink live.
Yeah, supposedly the tweets aren't going out. You have to manually post this.
Yeah, I'm sure you saw that letter that went mega viral earlier this week from somebody working at an AI company saying, you need to be afraid and use my AI tools. And I think there's some half-truths in there. Like, it is certainly productive. You're leaning into it, but I think the idea that white collar workers are going to be blown out of the water in the next 12 months is a bit aggressive. John Arnold talked about it a lot this week. John Arnold from 1031 and I were in New York for a couple of days together this week, and our two breakfast chats revolved around this topic, among other things, and just the inertia that exists within large organizations, people like their fiefdoms, to think that they're going to give that up easily and quickly is probably naive. And then on top of that, to your point, I think the tools are really cool. They're really good, but the edge cases are vast and definitely not buttoned up yet. And when you're considering the amount of sensitive data that would be required to replace white collar workers and trust with these agents, these bots, I don't think we're there yet from a security perspective.
No, I mean, I think once again, it's a timing thing, right? And I think people are either over-indexing or under-indexing. But the reality is, this is going to be massively disruptive to the workforce. I think it was Larry Fink had a speech recently where he said it's basically going to do to white collar work what globalization did to blue collar work, which I think is probably a pretty decent analogy in a sea of bad analogies. And if you think about it that way, it's not like all the factory workers in the US all lost their jobs at the same time. There was a gradually then suddenly acceleration process that resulted in globalization and a hollowing out of in industrial centers in the United States, right? It wasn't like one day everyone woke up and lost their job. And that's probably where we're going here. And specifically, I think the idea that humans completely leave the equation is, you know, in line with this whole concept of AGI is probably significantly off the mark. I think you see, you know, one employee or one manager doing the job that would normally take 10 or 20. And that person is, you know, enhanced by these tools and is a more effective team member as a result, right?
Yeah. Now, I was at an event in New York last night. I'll take a late train back to Philly with the event I was at. The founder of AQR, which is a quant hedge fund, was speaking. And this topic came up, and I thought his take was pretty good. I mean, and it's something that's not new, but it was just reinforcing, which is we've seen this type of, I mean, not at this scale in this pace, but I think humans are very adaptable. And I find it hard to believe that we're just going to have an economy where nobody works. Jobs will be different. You'll focus on other things. And I don't know, I think we're at the beginning of let a million flowers bloom. I think it's actually going to be really exciting in the sense that, you know, people are just going to be able to project things they want that are unique to their minds and their ideas on the world.
Yeah, I mean, if you have mass unemployment and hopelessness, it results in revolutions and civil wars. So there's a balancing act that the elites need to make sure exists. And part of that balancing act is telling the lie of universal high income, like Elon likes to say. And so, I mean, I think the socialist utopia people are obviously completely wrong and batshit crazy. So this idea that people aren't going to work and are going to have like a high quality of life is just, you know, it's like unicorns and rainbows, just bullshit. The idea that, you know, people have to find a way to survive or they die, right? So people will be working.
Really?
I think
they don't survive, they die.
Look, I think the unfortunate reality though is that this is going to accelerate and make worse the levels of income inequality we see right now. And the perfect example you see is what you just said, right? It's like, oh, you're using Opus 4.6 and you have an edge on everyone else. Well, it's expensive as fuck. And there's a balancing act here where you have the doomers on one side that says, you know, this is the end of humanity. Wrong. You have the utopians, you know, on the other side, they're also wrong on the opposite extreme. I think this will probably be a step up improvement for society. And you have this combination of wealth accruing to a small elite, specifically a tech elite, and accelerating in that direction. But on the other side, you have more accessible freedom tools than you've ever had before because of these open source AI tools. I mean, I was talking to Callie a few days ago. It's like there's hours of Citadel Dispatch where we discuss the pain points of a user having to figure out which mint to choose when they use Cashew. Well, it turns out all of that was a waste of time because you just tell the robot to create a Cashew wallet and it just figures out what mints it's going to use. And it is able to actually look at webs of trust and verifiable reputations and balance risk between multiple mints and do all these complex things that UX-wise was almost impossible to translate to an end user. The robot can just do that without the user even realizing. We've talked for years, we've talked about the difficulties with Lightning liquidity. Well, I have in the notes, might as well just bring it up now, that Amboss just released an MCP spec for bots to buy liquidity on their marketplace. When in my mind, before this existed, I always thought it was batshit crazy that people were going to like go and manually buy liquidity for their Lightning channels. And I think it still is mostly batshit crazy that people are going to do that. But is it batshit crazy that a bot will do that? No, someone's going to have a small business. They're going to sell, you know, coffee on a shack or something, and they're going to want to accept payments, and they're going to want to have a social presence. And they're just going to tell the bot, you know, create a Lightning node, spin up a Noster account, update the Noster account, manage my Lightning liquidity and accept payments. And then put it all in a QuickBooks file for me. You don't even need QuickBooks at that point. Put it all in a bookkeeping file to keep track of all my payments. And then you can do that all in a freedom stack without big tech if you want, and it'll be more accessible than ever. But then at the same time, you'll have Flock cameras on every fucking corner and people's, you know, cameras in their backyards all face tracking people and co-opting them and capturing them. So you have like two sides of the of the same coin that are doing different things. And one is empowering individuals and one is capturing individuals. And, but that's how it's always been, right? That's how it is with Bitcoin. You can use Bitcoin in varying levels of freedom. Same with this.
Yeah. And on that note, on the sovereign stack, we've been talking to the Maple guys behind the scene. They're working hard to make sure that sovereign LLM stack is done the right way. I'm very excited to see what they roll out in the coming months. Yeah, I mean, the UX, again, the projectionist sort of meme out there, I think that's a good way for me to sort of conceptualize it in my mind. Like, to your point, I had it spin up the Phoenix D server, and I was like, hey, like, we want a degree of privacy when we're taking this Bitcoin off the exchange after your extremely profitable hedge fund begins making distributions. Like, figure out how to create a cashew wallet and connect to a mint. And it came back. It's like, oh, got the wallet. I see that mini bits is a good mint. I joined that one. It's ready to go when we need it. It's like, okay.
Yeah, I yeah, Cashew specifically. Cashew and Noster are like two super easy integrations you can do with these things. That to me are just like major aha moments for open protocols and open specs. My bot was he was managing multiple on his own. He was just keeping funds in multiple mints, which I thought was clever. The Titanic approach: if one mint goes down, you don't lose all your money. But you can easily see how, you know, it's like, who will build the roads? The bots will build the roads. It's kind of crazy. We've always talked about, you know, the webs of trust, for instance, with Noster. It's like, how are people going to manage webs of trust? The robots will just manage the webs of trust. So now we need the tools so the robots can interact with those webs of trust easier, right? They should be robot specific. Most end users will probably never touch the webs of trust themselves. They'll never trust the mint auditors themselves. Running Fediments, right? Another perfect example. Lightning nodes, UTXO management. What about like the trade-off that we've always talked about with coin control and trying to explain coin control to end users, where you have these warring, you have these two warring trade-offs. You have cost versus privacy. And what does the end user want when they're actually picking their UTXOs? Well, the bot can figure that out per your preferences. Do you want to save money? Do you want privacy? Do you want to find a nice happy middle ground? Should it check the chain to see what kind of UTXO history the UTXOs have before it adds it to a payment? Things get really, really interesting. But then on the opposite side, like there's chain analysis tools that you just like load an API into your bot and you're like, okay, I want to put Marty Bent in jail. Why don't you like comb through his entire financial history and let me know, in just like plain English, let me know what the hell's going on here. So it's wild times in all regards. But I think net, it makes me much more hopeful and optimistic on the future.
Same. Before we drift too far into this conversation, let's get to Clark's dashboard.
Current price of Bitcoin, 65,430 cuckbucks. One cuckbuck is going to get you 1,529 sats. We're at a 1.31 trillion cuckbuck market cap. We are 48.2% below the previous all-time high of 126,160 cuckbucks. We are at block height 936,256. We got a 256 of the block height here. Nice. We had the second or the largest difficulty adjustment since the China mining ban. Last week, right after we recorded, it was a negative 11.2% adjustment. Currently, we're 1,184 blocks away from the next difficulty adjustment, estimated to be on February 20th, 2026. So 8 days from now, next Friday, it's looking like an upwards adjustment of 11.4% right now. Difficulty adjusted, as we said it would, after the winter storm. And hash rate is recovering. Go to mempool.space. They have 66 transactions in their mempool. And if you look at the hash rate chart, it looks like hash rate is establishing a V-like recovery as of right now. Fell to 884 exahash, currently at 945. So up 60 exahash in the last week. Mining is recovering. There's a lot of stuff you don't have on the list that I thought we were going to talk about.
Matt, you're muted.
Muted.
So let's talk about, case in point, I was saying I'm tired. So I failed a little bit on the list this time. I just
Sigbash 2.
I've been swamped on work, and I retweeted that. Or Irene Noster posted it. That's awesome. So what's the changes? I had arbed out on Dispatch for Sigbash V1, and you just had them on for Sigbash V2 on TFTC. What's the changes?
There's a zero knowledge proof component.
That's cool.
That makes it impossible for the Sigbash blind signer to know anything about the transactions. And then on top of that, I think a WASM protocol on top of it to make it very easy to create certain conditional transactions, many different forms.
Well, when I first had him on, it was like one of these things that, like, first of all, arbed out, huge friend of the both of ours, a friend of the pod. But like the concept was just as a Bitcoiner, I love the concept, right? No KYC, no touch point cosigner for collaborator Bitcoin transactions for multisigs. And it's very configurable. You can do a bunch of different things with them. You can use them for inheritance. You can use them for business management tasks, stuff like that. The biggest thing I couldn't wrap my head around was like how many users are actually technical enough and realize the need enough to actually use something like this. Well, to our earlier conversation, I think bots could use this thing all the time. It's actually great for the robots.
Yeah. So Logan pulls a tweet, this from Arbed Out earlier this week. Sigbash V2 is live. We switched to a new approach that I'm calling Oblivious Signing using MuSig2 WebAssembly, not WASM, and zero knowledge proofs. Our signer never sees your signing key or the transactions you ask us to sign. If you go, we're not going to do it now, but if you go on that tweet, check the responses and the quote tweets. A lot of the hardcore Bitcoin developers are very excited about this. And I think it's a great example of pushing what is currently possible in the design landscape of Bitcoin at a technical level to its limits before we begin talking about soft forks. And so for those who are wondering what the type of use cases you get out of and what soft forks are being discussed to enable those use cases, I think Covenants is the biggest one. So what Sigbash V2 gives you out of the box is Covenant-like capabilities. You basically do Covenants, but there's a trade-off is that you're trusting this server.
Yeah, I mean, it's a major trade-off. You have a centralized server that you're not trusting with your privacy, but you're trusting with uptime.
Liveliness.
And security.
Yeah.
But like if and like we talked about this on the original dispatch, because I had this issue with Final Message, which some freaks might remember. It's a project I had a long time ago. But Final Message was similar in that it just solved a very simple problem for people, and they could use it in a variety of different ways, but it solved it in a centralized way, which was you could take a final message, and if you died or something happened to you, it was a centralized dead man switch. It would send an encrypted message to whoever you want your recipient to be. Now, the problem I had with that is, and the problem you'll see with a lot of these things, is there wasn't that much product market fit for it because it required a user to be more technical, right? It tried to solve a lot of things that a full stack company like Akasa or Unchained solves for people with collaborative custody, but without the guardrails or the handholding. And the advantage you got out of that is you got more freedom, but most people would rather have the handholding and the guardrails. So the total amount of users that it's desirable to was quite small. And so what ended up happening, and their main trust, because the messages were encrypted, they didn't have to trust me with the contents of the message. They had to trust that when push came to shove that I actually sent the fucking thing. And so what ended up happening was we had like 100 users and it wasn't really making that much revenue. And then we're like 4 or 5 years down the line and you just got to still keep the servers running. You know, you got to like make sure the fucking thing is running. And it, you're like, oh yeah, I'll run this thing forever. You start hitting year 6, year 7, year 8. Like it gets exhausting to keep it up for a few amount of users. And so I talked to him about this. I was like, if you're doing this thing, and we talked about it, he's down for it. But like we talked about it a year ago. I was like, if you're doing this thing, you have to be ready to run this thing for a decade. That's what people are expecting. And not get burnt out over it. But I do think the bots increase the addressable market once again, because the cool part about a tool like Sigbash is the amount of configurability and optionality you have. But that's where humans fail a lot of times. They get decision paralysis. They have too many options. But bots don't have that issue. You tell a bot, I want you to use Sigbash to spin up some kind of scenario for me. Then the bot can advise and help, I think is a pretty big deal.
Yeah. And the other thing, I don't know if he was blowing smoke up my ass, but as we were talking through the server setup for Sigbash, I was like, could you just basically copy the logic of the server? Again, since it's using MuSig and zero knowledge proofs and WebAssembly, like all you need is just like to copy the logic, and could you like store it on Noster relays and just distribute?
Yeah, but you need to have the key material also, right, to be able to actually sign.
Again, I'm not a technical expert, but the way I understand how he's leveraging zero knowledge proofs, like you can transfer that outside of the individual server. Right. You just know somebody brings you a proof and it's like, okay, I recognize this is about proof.
You still need the signing server up though.
Yeah.
The signing server is the big that actually is like processing the request. And that's the big, like, just to give you an example here of, so how we handled it, with Final Message, is we stopped new signups like 5 years ago. And I still got like 3 users on that fucking thing because of renewals. Like I didn't want to kick them off. And I'm just waiting for them to stop using the product. Like no new users are signing up. The servers are running just for 3 fucking people.
Well, it's a dead man switch thing too. So they need liveliness too. So they're still like sending the email or whatever.
Yeah. They still have their switches enabled. And it's, you know, it was a non-signup. So I don't have any... I have no contact info.
So if you're listening and you're one of the three users, like, maybe check out the
signal. You're welcome. Yeah, they continue to pay their fees. Like, it's not like I'm like losing. It's not a losing money thing. It's actually relatively cheap to run. I'm sure it's relatively cheap for him to run the Sigbash server. It's a mental burden thing. It's like, particularly for these use cases, presumably people are going to be using it for inheritance and stuff. And he is a person that has high ethics and high integrity. Like, it will constantly be on the back of his mind. Like, this thing needs to work. Otherwise, someone's going to die and their kids aren't going to get Bitcoin.
Yeah.
Well, it's a huge responsibility.
How do you get more certain? We loved Arvd out. We think he's a man of the highest integrity. I would be very comfortable to say that. Like, it would be ideal if somebody like a Block or something ran this. Or
no, it needs to have a sustainable, scalable business model. I think, like, if this thing is pushing out, you know, $1 million worth of revenue a year, like, if he's not maintaining it, he'll hire people to maintain it and can afford to maintain it, you know. But if it gets stuck in hobby project territory, then he's going to have 50 users in 10 years and he's going to want to fucking kill himself. What's going to happen? That's just how it works.
Well, go check it out if you haven't seen it already. Yeah, it's pretty
cool. Give them revenue. Go use it. What is it? Sigbash? What is it? Sigbash.com?
Sigbash.com. Yeah.
Yeah, Sigbash.com. You ready to keep your Bitcoin and your privacy? Your rules, our verification, nobody's business but yours. It's really awesome. Cool tool, something I'll probably use.
Yeah.
And huge shout out to Arvd out.
Your first item on the list. I think it may be fake news, but we can talk about it anyway.
Is it really fake news? Because I just thought it just captured the vibes of the current status quo so well.
It's got a community note.
I'm glad it's fake news. Before we get there, shout out Soap Miner, zapped us 21,000 sats, best soap in the business. Go to soapminer.com. Thank you, sir. Yeah, suppose there was like reports that Klarna was doing buy now, pay later for OnlyFans, and I just felt like it was a great way to start the show. But I'm glad it's not real. You should not pay random women on the internet to see nude pictures of them and flirt with them and think that they're your girlfriend. But you definitely shouldn't put it on a payment plan.
Stop fapping, freaks. Stop fapping. Feeding the degeneracy, the nihilism of our age. If you're listening and you have an OnlyFans account, I just want you to know that I'm disappointed in you.
On both sides or?
Both sides, yeah. Both sides.
What about if you are a 19-year-old female and you're making $6-7 million a year and you never actually take your clothes off?
Still, you're feeding that beast.
Fuck that. I respect that hustle. Shout out those people. There's one woman specifically that is doing that. I forget her name. Sophie Rain. She's never does any nude. Just think about this for a second, Marty, okay? Young, good-looking women who don't have a hopeful path have historically, it's a business as old as humanity, sex work, right? Have gone into prostitution, they get pregnant, they get STDs, they get beat up, they like make like $20 an hour. And this chick realize she's at this one point in time where she doesn't have to leave her home, doesn't have to meet sketchy people, doesn't have to take off her clothes, doesn't have to have sex with people, and makes $6 million a year, just generational wealth right before AI makes income inequality way worse and actually destroys this business model because no one's going to believe anything that is real on the internet. You know, it's all the videos that could just be a dude that's pretending to be a woman. And like found this perfect point in time to just, you know, quickly get $10 million, $15, $20 million. And it's not really a scam.
It's not like an ICO or something where they're like, oh, this is the future Bitcoin, or this is, you know, going to power Wi-Fi or something. It's like pretty obvious what she's doing. She's like, give me money because I'm hot. And you're a consenting adult in this relationship of giving me money. There's like a lot more unethical ways to make money. I kind of respect that also. She should put it in Bitcoin.
I see your point, but it's soul sucking. She's always going to be the girl who made millions of dollars on OnlyFans. How's she going to tell her kids that?
And she's going to tell her kids, look, kids, I didn't take off my clothes and I took advantage of a bunch of horny men. And now your family has fucking thousands of Bitcoin. You're welcome.
At the very least, I hope she.
I have no usable skills and I just happened to be born attractive and took advantage of this exact moment for my family. I'd be like, shout out you. That's awesome.
Sophie, if you're out there and you're listening, just retire, adopt the fire mindset. It's time.
Yeah, your husband should come home from work. You're smoking weed, playing Call of Duty. To be clear, this is not the majority, right? This is how the really predatory aspect of it is young girls see the ones who are making $6 million, $8 million, never take their clothes off. And they're, you know, making no money and taking their clothes off and getting taken advantage of and all this other stuff. That's the fucked up part. I do think the entire model is predatory, but it's more I'm hating the game than the player is my point.
Yeah, it's worse than a Pareto distribution. I think it's like the top 1% of those creators, quote unquote creators, those whores. I'm kidding. take something like 95% of the income.
Yeah, it's like the top 10 of them or something.
Yeah.
And then everyone else is not making any money.
If you're out there, you're an OnlyFans subscriber, I'm disappointed. If you're out there and Klarna does get implemented and you're an OnlyFans subscriber, you get on a payment plan, I'm disgusted.
I'm glad it was fake news. I see silent.link zapped us 42,000 sats. Thank you, sir. Great service. eSIMs for your phone. Pay with Bitcoin. Silent.link.
I didn't catch this one. Israelis arrested over alleged insider polymer.
It came out this morning.
On IDF military secrets.
Yeah, the buy now, pay later OnlyFans was a good start off point, I felt like, for you. And then this was like, I don't know. This was like right up my alley. This is going to happen more and more. As we've talked about many times on the show, prediction markets, the whole point is to incentivize leaking of non-public information so that people have a more accurate view of truth. I'm trying to right now get my robot to understand what's going on in the world better. And one of the key metrics I'm using is he's tracking Polymarket markets because it doesn't require an API. It's all on Polygon, which is I think a layer two on Ethereum. Polymarket, but the cool part is
Polymarket has a free API too you could use.
Yeah, but I think the cool part is that the whole thing is unchained, so you don't have to go through the company's API. The hard part is you have to deal with like shitcoins and stuff, but you don't have to deal with it if the bot deals with it. So the bot doesn't even have to have an account. He just needs a Polygon wallet and he can view everything and trade on it. So we will see, and we've joked around a guy's on a helicopter on the way into Venezuela and he's got his phone out trading or whatever. And this is like the first real world example of it. You're on mute now.
Sorry, my boys are home. It's a parent teacher conference week. So they have off from school today and tomorrow. Prosecutors have alleged the Army reservists accessed classified information about Israel's planned attack on Iran in June 2025 and then shared it with the civilian to place multiple Polymarket bets. Most identifying details about the case of defendants remain classified, but prosecutors claim the pair are not senior officials in any military or government body. One of the defendants' attorneys, however, referred to their client as a highly regarded individual has made a significant contribution to Israel's security. The attorney claimed the charges are improper, constitute selective enforcement.
I wonder, there was And by the way, like, these prediction markets are completely useless if people can't use them anonymously. But because otherwise you won't get this kind of, you won't get the accurate ahead of time markets because you won't have insiders actually leak the information. But that doesn't mean that there's not a bunch of ways to try and catch insiders if you're trying to prevent that information from leaking. It's just going to take new techniques. Now, if you remember a few weeks ago, there was a market on Polymarket that was US Israel strike Iran, and an account that had predicted correctly other Israeli strikes bet on it, and it popped up to like 85-90% and then didn't happen. Everyone on socials were like, oh, the war is about to start, blah, 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 and it didn't happen. And a lot of speculation was, oh, it was the Israelis trying to spook the Iranians because the Iranians went into a full defensive position based on the poly market. And they were like, we're about to get attacked. This account's been right in the past. I wouldn't be surprised if we find out, or maybe we just never find out, because why tell people, that the IDF planted fake information for these two dudes and then waited till they made the trade. And so that trade that they made was the implication. It was like, okay, we caught the people that had the information. So they put fake information in their files or whatever, and then it got traded on.
Well, that's certainly a possibility and probably most likely considering what I just read on Yahoo Finance. But another thing, as you're explaining that, like, maybe governments, they just begin betting in these ways to incite defensive reactions because maybe it's cheaper to get intel that way.
I mean, but that was our original theory, right? That's definitely going to happen as well. That's what we were saying when it happened. But now with this coming out to light, this could very much be the reason. By the way, the reason you were reading that on, just to lament the death of the internet and how we need to fix so many things. I saw this story break on Wall Street Journal. Went to Wall Street Journal, paywall. Went to archive.is. It seems like it's getting DDoS, probably by a bunch of bots trying to archive things. Couldn't get it on archive.is. Searched the headline on Google to see if there was a non-paywalled site that had it. I found one that was The Block, the Bitcoin news site, just filled with ads and pop-ups, like just really disappointing experience. And then this article is actually re-syndicated on Yahoo Finance from Decrypt, which is another shitcoin new journalist, and just is just clean cut. But like, it's retarded. It's just like, come on, guys. There's like the paywallification and the ads is, yeah, and the bot should pay the SATS paywall and then send me my update.
Yeah. Yeah. I built it 6 years ago. You can go find it. It's open source, BTC Pay Server, Ghost. Figure out the logic there.
The bots will do it.
The bots will do it. And we get our Human Rights Foundation Financial Freedom Report story of the week out of Kenya. Central bank warns banknote bouquets.
Like flowers.
I know. I'm sick, freaks. Please bear with me. Central bank warns banknote bouquets could land you in jail. Kenya's central bank warned Kenyans in the lead up to Valentine's Day that making bouquets out of colorful banknotes could be punished with a 7-year jail term. Officials argue the banknotes used in bouquets are often folded, rolled, glued, stapled, pinned, or otherwise damaged, which they say compromises the integrity, defaces the national currency, and increases the cost of replacing damaged notes. For more stories like this, make sure you go to financialfreedomreport.org.
So yeah, I mean, most of the stories aren't like this, which is why I chose it. I just thought it was just a good example of clown world. I mean, clearly, the reason they're doing this punishment is because they don't want to be made fun of on social media for their shitty fucking currency. And they know it's viral. But it just shows how desperate they are that... the way they're trying to stop that is with a 7-year sentence, which is insane.
Yeah. Seeing it in the YouTube chat, who's better at golf, Odell or Bent? I reckon Odell, just a feeling. Your feeling is right, sir. We've played together before. You smoked me.
Marty's going to get better, though.
Getting better, though.
We, me and Marty, it was very early in our friendship. This now is 7 years ago, 2019. We were just getting to know Rod, my co-founder at Bitcoin Park, and he was working at Bitcoin Magazine at the time. And we went in San Francisco. He belongs to like this really hoity-toity club as a out-of-state member. So he has a discount, to be clear. But he brings us to this hoity-toity golf club that he rarely plays at. He plays at maybe once or twice a year, and we're his guests. And, you know, it's got to be a super expensive club. Anyway, Marty gets up on the first tee and just straight whiffs it. And then that was our, I think we ended up playing 36 holes, but that was the beginning of
we played both courses.
They just dribbled it. He like dribbled it right in front of the pro shop. You know, it was just like everyone was looking straight, went like 20 yards.
You'll be happy to learn. I don't whiff my tee shots anymore. I will slice them every once in a while. But
To the best of us. It happens to the best of us. It was just wild.
Yeah, and then we finished 36 holes and got back to the clubhouse and got shilled Libra token by one of the members we were playing with.
Yeah, and I drank so much whiskey they almost didn't let me on the plane afterwards. The woman at the ticket counter was like, "I need you to step outside and sober up for a little bit before I give you your ticket." And I argued with her. I was like, "That's not how sober." She's like, "Step outside." I was like, "Okay, I'll go step outside." It's like, he's like, that's not going to, I'm not going to like stand outside for 5 minutes. It's going to make me more sober.
Yeah. It was a fun trip. Fun trip. First live rabbit hole recap on the roof of the Bitcoin conference 2019 in a
garage. That's when we didn't call the top. We told people to smash by the top at $13,000. And then we went down for 2.5 years after that.
Yeah, it was a bull trap. Yeah. Bull trap. We bull trapped everybody. Speaking of which,
turned out it was a good purchase. What?
Speaking of which, everybody do your part. Go smash buy right now. Price of Bitcoin. 65.5. This is cool. We got people vibe coding using OpenClaw. Mempool Madness has taken Noster by storm this week.
So a couple of things. First of all, the commoner zapped us 21,112 sats. Palindrome Boost says, LFG, let's fucking go. Thank you, sir. Your support. Okay, so Mempool Madness, one of our buddies created this. This is not our project. Cool aspects here. He has OpenClaw, his open source AI robot, running on his Start9. So Start9's open source MIT licensed for-profit project, but it's fully open source. You can install Start9 on any type of computer you want to, or you can buy hardware directly from them. Their alpha firmware allows you to both host web apps in ClearNet and run OpenClaw. So he's running OpenClaw on his Start9 at home. Then he had to create this game. This game is being hosted on the Start9 as well. And it's proxying through a VPS to protect his IP address. And you can just go to it at mempoolmadness.com. Now he has his bot running a cashew wallet using the CocoaD skill. So it's running its own cashew wallet. He's running LNBits to track bets and payouts. And the concept of the game, and then it uses the mempool.space API to track Bitcoin blocks. And the concept of the game is you're basically placing small bets, 1,000 sats a pop, on how long it's going to take for the next block to be confirmed from the last one. So on average, that should be 10 minutes. Obviously, it's not always 10 minutes. Right now, we are in a hash rate increase difficulty period. So difficulty is expected to go up. So blocks are actually coming in sooner. The house takes no cut. 70% of the pot goes into the next round. 70% goes to the winner. 21% goes to the next round. 9% is going to OpenSats, which is also happening with as an open protocol, because he was able to set this up without my permission, because OpenSats has a Lightning address. So just automatically send sats to opensats at vlt.ge, which is our Lightning address to our node. And then last but not least, the bot has a Noster account and is broadcasting out to the world every time someone wins. So you have this combination of open source self-hosted software, open protocols, money, and communication identity with Noster. and money with Bitcoin and Cashew. And he was able to spin it up in like eight hours or something of iterative improvements. He did the first prompt and then he started doing little improvements to it. And yeah, it's like a rudimentary proof of concept, but guys, like this is fucking crazy. Like this is the early things of something that's a true game changer here.
I'm going to, I'm playing right now. I'm going to see if I can win.
So that's a, by the way, Marty, to what I was saying earlier about recursive improvements of AI tools and stuff, I like one prompted my bot to play this game yesterday or 2 days ago. And it made like 200,000 sats. It was fucking crushing. It was doing great. Everything was going fantastic. You know, woke up this morning, bot has no idea what Mempool Madness is, can't connect to it, can't figure out what's going on. I tried to troubleshoot with him for like a half an hour, 35 minutes. I told him I'm sick of him, and I'm tired of him, and I'm not going to try and set it up again. But at first, he was able to, the first time I ever tried, he basically just one-shotted. I was like, here's your strategy, it's a game of probability, figure it out. And he just figured it out. He paid with his own Cashew wallet. He was getting payouts from his own Cashew wallet. And now he just can't even fucking figure it out.
I'm telling you, you got to get the QMD. You got to have it. Use Opus 4.6 for like one run and just be like, audit your memory system. I want you to upload QMD and it'll do it and make it much better.
Well, I just think it's hilarious. Is this the blog post you told me to just copy and paste my dude, right?
Yes, one of them.
Yeah, so people are making improvements to their bots by just blindly copying and pasting blog posts that effectively teach it new skills and give it new. This is why there's going to be so much issue. There are going to be so many issues, but it's still fucking cool. It's really fucking cool.
But to your point, like having the bots do all this and connecting, I mean, this is the biggest boon for this freedom tech. I mean, we've been talking about it for 8 years now, and I think this technology is the biggest boon for it that we've ever seen. Like connecting,
it's all the last piece.
Yeah.
It's the glue. It's the glue that is going to bring everything together and makes all this stuff usable to the average person. Yeah.
If you guys haven't played with this yet, highly recommend just playing around with it a little bit. Takes a bit of getting used to, but I do think it is imperative, particularly if you're working. I've got my cousin and my brother. Like I've been talking to them for the last 2 weeks. Like, guys, start using this for stuff. I've been impressed by what they've been able to
do. Yeah. An easy way to get your feet wet is Callie has a new project called Clawi.ai, Clawi.ai. Ironically, it doesn't accept Bitcoin. That's probably the biggest issue I have with it, but you can use a 2fiat.com prepaid Bitcoin card to pay for it if you want, if you don't want to put your credit card information in. But it's just real. It's one of the easier ways to just get set up and running. And look, it's not going to be your final setup. Like ideally you should be self-hosting these things. Then it has other nuances, like you don't want to self-host just blindly on your own network and like have it have access to everything that's on your home Wi-Fi. So it's just it's an easy way to get started, play with it. Don't give it anything too intimate, you know, like don't give it actual like credentials to your main email account or your GitHub or something like that. Be very deliberate about what information you give it. But this is one of those things that like the only way you'll get comfortable with it and you'll see what the capabilities are is if you play with, you have to play with it. You can't listen to podcasts about it. You can't watch videos about it. You have to actually use the thing. And to our earlier conversation, like the first step of the employment dynamic switching and the value capture within our economy migrating is going to be people taking advantage of these tools and having a leg up on other people. So you will be at a disadvantage significantly if you don't play around with these things sooner rather than later, in my opinion.
And they're worse they're going to be. If you start today, it's going to be the worst that it ever is for you. It's not going to get better.
And like, yeah, once again, not a panacea. It's going to... Oh, the other thing is, if you do use Callie's project, it uses OpenRouter on the back end, so you have access to all the different models. You got to be very careful about using the super high end ones. It gets really, really expensive. He added a change to it that tells you the cost when you're switching models, which didn't exist before. But for instance, they measured in per 1 million tokens, which is like how is like a metric for your calls to the AI model. Opus 4.6, which is widely considered the best one out of Anthropic and just the best one that exists right now for these things, is $15 per 1 million. If you use Google's Gemini 3 Pro, it's only $2. So it's almost a 7x cost difference between the two. Then OpenRouter also has, it offers OpenAI's free model, GPT OSS 120B, which fucking sucks, but it's completely free. So you can tell your agent like things that don't matter as much, like use the free one for that. And you'll learn different ways, but just, I just want to be clear here because some of you might have the same intuition as me, which is you only want the best and you will end up, you know, $1,000 in the hole or something within a couple of days if you're just recklessly hitting the most expensive model.
Since I set mine up a month ago, it was before Anthropic caught on to people using their Max Pro 5X subscriptions to OAuth in. And so I'm still grandfathered into that. So I'm not hitting the API. I'm using my Max Pro account to do all that. It's like $200 a month.
You can't do that anymore, right?
No.
Yeah, I spend so much. And so, and like, it also matters, like you have, your agent is, once again, an advanced toddler in a lot of ways. Like if you don't keep asking it, how much money am I spending on tokens? Can we reduce the amount of token usage? It will just go crazy with it. So I don't know. This was probably after last episode. Yeah, this was after last episode. A freak posted on Noster that he wanted a bot that knew all of RHR and could ask it questions. And so there's been almost 8 years of RHR, 400 episodes. So I had it transcribe all RHR transcripts. All RHR episodes, it transcribed them automatically because there weren't existing transcripts for a bunch of the early episodes. And then saved it in a file, 400 episodes of RHR. And I realized 24 hours later that it was saved in short-term memory, which is called the context window in these AI agents. And so it was every time I would ask it a simple question, this is just an example, I don't ask it the weather, but like, what is the weather outside? It would send all 400, the transcripts of all 400 episodes of RHR to the LLM model. And I was getting charged like a crazy fucking amount. And then I realized I was getting charged so much. And I asked the AI agent, I asked the bot, I was like, what's going on here? He's like, oh, well, it looks like I've been sending all 400 episodes of RHR every time I ask a simple question. I probably shouldn't do that. It's like, yeah, you probably shouldn't fucking do that. Like, why are you doing that? Don't do that. So just keep that in mind. But anyway, once you figure it out, then you start to see, like now I have a separate file that has all the dispatch transcripts since the beginning of the show, all the RHR transcripts since the beginning of the show. And then I can individually queue it to ask it questions and pull, you know, our collective brain resources that we've had for 8 years, which is just create, like that capability is fucking awesome. But if you do it in a naive way, it can cost you a lot of money. So just keep all this stuff in mind.
Yeah. The another thing, I'm not sure how it works with Clawly.ai, Callie's thing. But if you're setting it up in a VPS and you're like doing it the old fashioned way, make sure you run it through like Cloudflare or Tailscale because your server IP will be exposed and that's how people hack in. So make sure you have a tunnel application between your server and the broader internet as well.
Yeah, that's one of the nice aspects. Like, Cali's service handles all that stuff for you.
Yeah.
You end up paying more, a little bit more.
It's worth it, though.
Yeah.
Especially if you're dealing with Bitcoin stuff. You don't want somebody getting into your server.
Yeah, and you're just getting your feet wet. Like, convenience does help a lot here. Once again, I don't think this should be people's final setup, but it's a really easy way to get your feet wet.
Yeah.
On how to do it. And by the way, like, this is, it's, I think it's an interesting example of where we currently are with this tech, is that I basically spun up that Nostr RHR bot in one prompt within a couple hours once it finished the transcriptions. Like, that was the easy part. The hard part was doing it in an efficient way that didn't cost me a ton of money. Yeah. But it actually was just like one or two prompts. I was like, here's the RSS feed, transcribe it. I want you to create a Nostr bot that can respond to people.
Yeah. I feel like Carlos would have been the one to make this, but it seems like he was slacking.
Well, hopefully someone else makes it, because there's kind of a mental burden to deal with, to be honest. But now I have my own. So I disabled, in a fit of exhaustion, I just disabled the Nostr bot. I was like, stop fucking posting. Stop looking up on the transcripts. I don't want to pay any more money. But now I have it. I've been using it myself, so maybe I'll re-enable the Nostr bot at some point.
I'm the last two blocks that I've bet on mempoolmadness.com, I've come 3 seconds short of it hitting the block that I bet on. One more bet, I'm a degenerate. Yeah.
I was so frustrated at my guy for failing to set it up again.
All right, let's go. I need this block to be mine between 8 and 9 minutes.
Why'd you book one ahead of time? Oh, someone else is in there. Oh, see, I think this guy is running a bot too, Mempool Madness.
Is he front running me?
He's gonna run over your. He's gonna run over your thing.
Yeah, what else have we got? What else happened this week? Epstein files. When you saw DAOs over 50K, we should have worried about the Epstein files.
What the fuck is that?
I don't know. It was so bad. It's like completely out of touch.
But she's the attorney general, right? Bondi, Pam yeah. Bondi?
Yeah.
I mean, it was clearly like a Trump talking point, and she just doesn't handle the deflection as well. It's like, you're the attorney general. Why are you quoting stock market prices? To tell, it's just like, the stock market is booming. Why are we talking about the Epstein files? It's like, well, you're the lead prosecutor in the country, and this seems like one of the most important prosecutions that people want to see happen, and you have absolutely fuck all to do with the stock market. So what the fuck are you talking about?
It's like, yeah, these people are emailing about human beef jerky that they were packaging and bringing to parties. I don't think we want a bunch of cannibals running around the world.
It's like, it'd be one thing if, like, they were asking Bessent his opinion on the Epstein files, and he's like, I'm the Treasury Secretary, the economy's going great. But like, imagine if you went into like a police department and you like talked to the detective and you're like, yeah, someone broke into my house. Can you like figure out who broke into my house? And he was like, have you seen the stock market lately? Your Charles Schwab account is so high. Why are you asking me about the home break-in? It's yeah. her fucking job.
Yeah, I would be surprised if she's attorney general for much longer after yesterday. That was an epic blunder, the likes of which I haven't seen in quite some time on Capitol Hill. On the more productive stuff, though. Wild. Like, we said it last week, nothing's going to happen. And that was just like a reinforcement. Like, they don't seem like they really want to prosecute anybody as it pertains to the Epstein trial or the files being released. Important update. Favorite desktop wallet, Sparrow, version 2.4.0 was released with the ability to send silent payments. Hardware wallet support, address display chunking, wallet discovery for USB hardware wallets, Codex 32 support, Trevor Safe 7, Ledger Nano Gen 5 support, Keycard and Keycard Shell support.
Love to see it. By the way, a cool aspect here, scroll down, Logan. I feel like this is a cool Noster health metric. Look at all the zaps he got. He got 50,000 zaps on this post. I feel like that's just seeing open source developers of like critical open source software release an update, immediately be one of the most trending posts on Noster and receive one of the larger zap loads that a post has gotten this week is like a really cool sign to see. I mean, that's where I'd like to see the future go. You know, I like to think OpenSats in a lot of ways is like a stopgap accelerant into a world where ideally bots and humans are funding maintainers of software projects that they need directly using freedom money. That's fucking cool.
Yeah. Yeah. It's here, freaks. We live in the future.
Let's reboost from last week before we forget.
All right. Let me pull it up.
Since we're like technically in software updates, I see on Noster we got one from our asteroid dude, 21,000 sats from roaming, and his meme, his emoji is the asteroid. I think it's an asteroid. Is it an asteroid or a basketball?
I think it's an asteroid. All right. We got three boosts to read from Rabbit Hole Recap, 395, Stay Humble, and Stack Sats. February 6th. Yeah, that's right. Our girl Pringle Max Sill, 88,888 sats, eights across the board, palindrome boost. What a time to be alive. You two rock. See you both soon. Love Sill and Tony. Can't wait to see you. Thank you for the support. Our boy Foyzy, 25,252 sats, palindrome boost. Shout out to all the Chicago Bitcoiners. Chicago has multiple meetups happening throughout the month between the city and the burbs. We're also working on Chicago's first physical Bitcoin hub that will function as a restaurant, Fork and Coin, and a workspace for Bitcoiners. Learn more at ChicagoBitcoinCollective.com. Shout out Chicago, city near and dear to my heart. Stimmy, hashtag 40 hours per week of podcast listening, 22,222 sats, twos across the board, palindrome boost, bot-powered pig butchering is going to be wild. Taking those kingpins down in Southeast Asia might look like decapitating the Hydra. Yeah, you got to beware. These bots are going to get you. Another thing, make sure you guys have safety words with your family. Seeing an increase in the amount of fake kidnappings, and they'll call you, say we kidnapped your wife, or it'll be your wife on the phone. They kidnapped me. They need you to wire $10,000 to this bank account.
Another good technique is to just like use Signal as your communication method.
Yeah. And they're good at spoofing. Apparently, the one I saw this week, they like spoofed the number so well that like came up.
That's what I'm
like
saying.
Wife was actually calling
them. Yeah. But they can't do that with a paired Signal account. If you already have an open Signal chat with someone.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's going to get really messy. All this, like the whole infrastructure that our society is built on with KYC and bot checks and stuff. Once again, I will repeat that the fundamental change that we saw with OpenClaw, it already was functionality that already existed. It wasn't like a technological breakthrough. First of all, it's open source. But second of all, it just made it easier to interact with these things. And specifically, it made it so that you can get around bot restrictions by just having it, you know, use a web browser and click around and go do things. So like basically turned everything into an API in a very broken way, but still. And so we're going to see mass impersonations of people, audio generation, video generation, and it's just going to break all these systems that our society is currently built on top of. And we're going to have to kind of start fresh in a chaotic way. But yeah.
Yeah. Be aware. We already talked about Magma. Shout out to the Emboss team. I'm actually going to be recording with Jesse tomorrow. This is cool. Our friend, good friend of the show, Justin Moon, vibe coded something to make it easier for OpenClaw. to communicate over Nostr. So he built an OpenClaw extension for Marmot protocol, the protocol underneath end-to-end encrypted messaging app, White Noise. If you're comfortable running vibe-coded alpha software, please give it a try. Let me know how it goes. So
I tried to run this and almost broke everything. And then I got tired with my bot and I told them to forget everything I told them and to delete a bunch of shit. But this is the future. I was talking to Jeff G of Marmot and White Noise, lead maintainer, and they're working on a proper CLI client that's geared for bots, command line client that's geared for bots that they should hopefully be releasing in a few weeks. But this is a perfect example of open protocols being superior to the current status quo. Most people are using Telegram right now to communicate with their claw box. Telegram is obviously a centralized company. Telegram itself does bot checks to try and stop accounts. So like if you create a fresh Telegram account and you try and use a burner phone number, oftentimes they'll block your account. Other people are trying to use Signal. I successfully set up Signal and then it broke. To communicate with my bot. Signal is also actively trying to throttle Signal CLI connections and linking. They have like a bot prevention program, which is very counterintuitive in this current place we find ourselves in. So open protocols fix this, right? And connecting to your bot should be as simple as, this is my MPub, message me using Marmot. Like, it's obvious. It is really obvious. And I think what people miss when they say like agentic communications or agentic payments is one of the key aspects is the human to agent and agent to human part. And I think open protocols specifically really excel with that. And they have to, and in that situation, they have to be simpler, right? You can get away with an agent to agent protocol that is complicated because the agent will figure it out, right? I said, I want my agent to trade on Polymarket. He's like, you need USDCE on Polygon to do this. I was like, well, here's some Bitcoin. Why don't you figure out how to get that? And he just went and did all the complicated shitcoin shit. Like he was on like Uniswap and things and like found his way into his Polygon wallet. So like he can figure all that out. But when it comes to like a human trying to actually communicate, I should be able to just say, here's my MPUB, message me back. I shouldn't be doing like a complicated pairing mechanism to make that happen.
Yep. That's a great point. And on the topic of Signal and Telegram, Logan, pull it up. I'm sure you saw this, but everything is borked. So there was an Israeli company called Paragon, a security company, quote unquote security. They've got a product called Graphite, and
they're hacking mercenaries.
Yeah, they're a couple of their idiotic employees posted a selfie on LinkedIn with the sort of back end of their Graphite product in the background. And JSR was tweeting about it. He has a more detailed sort of infographic highlighting everything. But it looks like Signal's borked, WhatsApp, Telegram, and a bunch of other apps. It looks like they have root access, kernel access to everybody's devices, essentially.
To be clear here, because there's a point here where it can be an informative news item that helps people understand their risks, or it can be something that creates hopelessness among people in terms of security. The way like Paragon works, or like NSO Group with Pegasus, is they collect 0 days. They collect ways to compromise your device before they're public. And then they target individuals, right? So it's not mass surveillance, right? It's like, okay, you're a dissident. You're fighting against the Rwandan government. We are going to send you a WhatsApp message that has a hidden payload that compromises your entire phone. And then we're going to access different apps and stuff within your phone, right? So like, they're not like, it's not them going into back-end Telegram servers or back-end Signal servers or whatever. It's them breaking into your phone and then accessing these different apps. And there's ways to protect yourself from it. First of all, if you're on Android, the best way to protect yourself is to use a de-Googled Android, specifically Graphene. And ironically, that works with Pixel devices, Google Pixel devices, because they allow you to unlock and relock the bootloader. If you're on iPhone, single best thing you can do is just be constantly updated to the most recent release. And then the second biggest thing you can do is they have a lockdown mode that like secures iOS much stronger. But a lot of times what you see is their capabilities aren't, you know, the latest device with the latest updates, but most people don't have that. And they keep all of this very secretive. This group specifically, Paragon is, and same with NSO Group, is like ex-Israeli intelligence. It's one of these startups that came out of Israel's like secretive NSA style units. I think it's like Unit 8200, I think is the name of it. But what's interesting here, and so then they're technically a private company, and then they sell their services to governments. And then in the case of the United States, it's been argued that it doesn't break the Constitution because it's a private government that's doing it. So it's not like they need a warrant. But then they sell it to, you know, all these random tin pot dictators that usually wouldn't have these capabilities, right? Random small countries that just pay like a couple $100,000 and they can pick an enemy that they want to hack and get into. And they're very secretive about their capabilities. So in this case, they posted a selfie onto LinkedIn and it had a bunch of their capabilities that people didn't know previously.
Yeah. Thank you for clarifying. I'm not trying to fearmonger here, but I think this individual they were targeting was in Chechnya or something like that.
Yeah. Like all his information was on the back screen behind their selfie.
Yeah.
Retarded. Those people lost their job.
Yeah. Not gonna lie, I think I gotta tap out. I'm like delusionally weak right now. With this gold. We got anything up here?
Nah, I mean I'm fine with rapping. I know vibes are down in the dumps right now, with people, particularly with the Bitcoin price, but also with everything else going on in the world. Keep your chin up. Don't get shaken out.
Never doom. Never doom. Never doom.
The future's bright.
It is. Future's very bright. We got each other. If anything, we got each other in the live chat. Freaks. Go play around with the Freedom Tech. Go have fun with your robots and your Freedom Tech. Did I win?
No. Nobody won that round. It's a brave new world out there. I'm optimistic.
I am too. Thank you guys for joining us. We will be back next week. I will be in better form, hopefully. And should be a fun day.
If you haven't yet, listen to my Citadel Dispatch with Alex Gleason and Marty's TFTC with Arb Doubt. Both are great. I think you'll enjoy it.
Getting back to the basics, tech, the tech. We're here for the tech, freaks.
Always have been. Stay humble, stack sets.
Peace and love. Okay.